Hey guys, don't forget, April 23rd through the 28th, 2023, we'll be in Nashville, Tennessee for the second Street Cop Training Conference. You do not want to miss out on that. So far, we have some real big headliners on there. It'll be 5 days of transforming training in Nashville, Tennessee. 111, 110.
Street Cop.
Hey guys, welcome to this episode of the Street Cop Training Podcast. I'm your host, founder and CEO of Street Cop Training. My name is Dennis Bonino, and today I have with me two amazing guests, two of our top instructors. But I feel like all our instructors are top instructors. Anyway, none other than the Red Ninja and Tommy Brooks, aka the Gun Game Master. Hi, Ken.
Hi, Den.
This is going to be like the best part about Kenny's podcast is this is going to be fun to just dig things out of him with his short six-word answers.
That's a fact.
And Tommy Brooks.
What's going on?
Hey, if people don't know who Tommy Brooks is, why don't you give us the 90-second version of who you are, your history, what you teach, and things like that.
Sure. So I do the gun game, and I think that people often are confused about the design of what we do during the presentation. I think some people, like, I get text messages sometimes and messages from people say, like, you know, Second Amendment questions, like, you know, what's illegal about the guns? And we talk more about the focus of like gangs and the shootings and the very obviously illegal side of firearm possession, whether it be the felon in possession, whatnot. As far as me though, I'll tell you, Dan, you often, you're very complimentary, which I appreciate, but I'm like, I laugh all the time. I'm like, no one has ever gotten me wrong more than you when it comes to like over complimenting me. You did a training recently in Boylston and Mass. And I got a bunch of text messages from guys like, hey, Dennis just gave you a shout out in class. And I thought, oh, that's cool. And 10 minutes later, they go, yeah, he was giving an example. It's like, no one got more guns than Tommy Brooks. And I'm like, of course, I swallowed my heart because it's the opposite for me. And I'm like, listen, I'm like, we work in a squad environment. And I'm far from the best, yeah, with compared to what I'm working with. But yeah, the presentation's really, though, focused on kind of the ins and outs of a firearm recovery, street level firearm recoveries. And I'm sure we'll talk about it now this morning, but all the nuance involved in that.
Your bio. When did you start? What do you do now?
Bio. I got hired in, let's see, I think I started the academy. I think it would have been the end of 98, which is funny because all these years later, I get to joke. I'm like, well, you know, back in the 90s, you know, I had 11, you know, 13 months of 90s policing. But I got on as a transit cop. Initially, and I did that for about 3.5 years, and then I hopped over to the Boston police. So the way Boston's broken down, it's in areas, and I guess if you were to describe it just loosely, the busier area when it comes to, you know, just the shootings and that kind of side of policing would be called Area B. And so I went to Area B, and that was it. I did my whole career there. I really never left. I've changed roles a little within. But I was a patrolman in Area B for all my patrolman years. I went over to the gang unit. I was a detective in the gang unit. When I made sergeant, I went back to Area B. Let's be honest. I mean, the gang unit covered mostly Area B anyway. And then I was a sergeant in Area B. Then I went back to the gang unit as a sergeant. And then I went to another part of Area B, which is B3. And I was they call it the anti-crime supervisor, essentially, the plainclothes guys again. And I did that. And then I made sergeant detective. They kept me right there in B3. Then I made lieutenant. They kept me right there in B3. So I'm a case study on how, like, you know, failure to launch, I suppose, in some ways.
Dude, when you went plainclothes, do a lot of people in the areas that you work know who you are?
100%. Yeah, when I say plainclothes, I guess the terminology variations. It's not undercover. I mean, like many guys, you know, I got 25 or 30 undercover, like, drug buys under my belt just from earlier in my career, you know, that kind of stuff there. But no, I never did like the deep undercover stuff. I was never in a drug unit or anything like that. No, plain clothes mean you go to work and we call them, you know, cops and cargo shorts, basically. But it's, you know, you dress down. It's low profile. The car is unmarked. It's all black, but it's obviously a police car. If you look at it for a half second, they'll sometimes have more than we could put a bunch of guys in it. Like, sometimes you'd ride 2, 3, you know, sometimes 4 deep. I think it's, we call it anti-crime. They call it locally, they call it the K car, the origin story. I actually generally generally goes back to the old Plymouth Reliant K cars was what they drove. And the reference just stuck all these years later.
And now your Lieutenant Patrol Division B, the B area.
Correct. Yeah. So no longer anything in the detective wing. It's every time you get promoted, you have to give up the detective rating. So when I was a detective and I made sergeant, I lost the detective rating with the promotion. When I was a sergeant detective and I made lieutenant, you lose the detective rating. So, I work now. I have one of the districts. I'm a shift commander, shift supervisor. Some people call it shift commander, but technically the captain is the commander of the whole building. So I'm the supervisor of the whole shift. It's just me. There's one lieutenant on the shift and that's it. And we get, and trust me, I'm going to talk about it. It's just some of the best, obviously, where I am.
When you said that you started at Transit, was it hard to get on the job there? Is that why you started somewhere else first?
No. I don't say this to be tongue in cheek. I really had no interest in law enforcement, if I'm being honest with you. I had a friend who ironically is from New Jersey, actually.
Oh, shit.
Yep. And he was trying to get me to take the police test with him. And he just wanted someone to go with, I think, really, you know? And I was like, that sounds like a terrible idea because then I might accidentally become a cop, you know? And he was just like, no, he's like, you'll be good. And he says, you know, he's like, if you're a veteran, you might even go to the top of the list. And I said, yeah, I just wasn't really that into the idea. And then I've told the story during trainings before, but I had an experience one day with a police officer that then led me to want to take the test. And then I took the test and then he was right. I mean, it put me right to the top of the list. I got probably a job offer. The scores came out. I think I had the job offer within 3 months. And it timed out well what was going on. So I thought, all right, I'll do this till I can be a school teacher and have summers off or whatever else my plan was at the time.
Now you are, what, 24 years later?
Yeah, about 23 and a half years, yeah. And but that was it. It was a holding spot for my life. But then I got there and I hooked up again with some plainclothes guys. I don't know how every job works, but so where it was in Transit was there was a handful of guys and girls who were in a unit that was doing 90% of the work. They were it. I mean, every time I heard the radio, you know, chirp up with a gun, or every time I heard radio chirp off for a transport needed, you know, a drug arrest or whatever, anything that was interesting to me, it was always the same group of like six people. And so I started asking them, like, you know, how do you get in the unit? And they're like, it's a small unit comparatively, you never know. But then what happened was one of the guys needed a day off. And because they were a small unit, they could only do swaps within themselves. So mathematically, the way on a 4-2 schedule, if you wanted a day off, you wanted to swap. There's only two people in the whole department that could trade with you because of the squad differentials. So I said, I'll work for you. And they were like, I don't think they'll let someone outside the unit do it. And I don't know, a guy was in a pinch for a day. He ended up asking, he begged the boss if I could, and this was just to work for him. And then like a lot of kind of stories go, little bit of luck. Some kid just hopped a turnstile, not the crime of the century. And we were like, hey, let's go talk to him. And the kid ended up boogieing on foot, grabbed him, he had a gun, and it just turned into a nice thing. But then what happened is the guy that I was working with, jokingly with me, was like, dude, you're the good luck charm. And then I need, you know, next Wednesday off. And I was like, I'll work for you. And then next guy, I did this. So then my number, I stuck it right there at the unit. Anyone who wanted a day off called me. And because I'd had a little luck, the boss of that unit was like, yeah, you can work with him. They want to open it to everybody, but just keep it simple. If you can't fill it amongst yourselves, you can swap with him. And next thing you know, I had intentionally and actively changed my whole schedule. I was basically working 2/3 of my work shift was not my shift anymore. I was working for these guys on swaps. And that was it. And then like, again, a little bit of luck and working with other guys who were a lot better at this than I was, just made us look good, I guess. And that was it. And then people asked me why I left to go to Boston. And the truth is, cause I mean, I love the guys I worked with at Transit. I love the job. I left for the shaving policy. I make no secret about it. I really wanted my beard back. I wanted my goatee back. I wanted something on my face cause my hair fell out at 18. So this is my haircut. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like grab Kenny and say, hey, you want to shave your head bald? And he says, no. It's like, okay, well, that's what they did to me for my career. So yeah. I said, well, and they had no wiggle room, clean shaven, hard rule. And they said, Boston was more lax. And I said, well, that sounds cool.
Oh, no shit.
That was it. That's literally why I left.
How old were you moved over there?
I guess I got on young. I think I was 21 when I got hired. It was 22 when I started. So I'd say 24 probably.
Yeah.
Maybe 25.
Tell me about growing up in the Boston area.
So I grew up in a city just north. So I'm not, so I, like from here, I'm from Boston. from Boston. I'm from 15 minutes north. Okay. Not that there's a huge variation there, but yeah, so I grew up in a city just north of Boston, which would be very comparable in a lot of ways to the busy areas I currently police. It was an inner city environment. It was a violent area. I remember my senior year of high school, they had 14 murders, and my area was only 8 square miles of living. Wow. You know, and most of them were just out of high school, so all people you knew and stuff. So it was a busy area. It didn't compare to some of the areas in Boston where I work now, but it was on the spectrum, as they'd say. You know, it was a busy area, but it was good. I got a lot of insight just on watching people making bad decisions, if you will.
So that, I guess, led to your naturally talent or luck, quote unquote.
Yeah, we'll call it. Yeah, I mean, it's not talent, but it's also not luck. It's a lot of it's just kind of placement, you know. Let me give you an example. Let me use Kenya as a comparison here. And I've said this a lot. I've actually mentioned this to many people before. So one of the things that's impressive to me with a guy like Kenny is that it's him. It's just, he's solely responsible for what he did, for what he's got. You know, he's alone. He gets his keys for his cruiser. He goes out on the road. It's up to him to be self-motivated. He goes out, he does this interdiction work. He's developed his own program. Then he calls for units when he decides it's time for something to happen. And I think that there's something to be said for that. I think I've said before, that's a unicorn effect. I mean, there's not many that can just wake up and be that good. And I said, the variation for me is that I work in an area where the calls are going to come to you anyway. It's there will always be calls regular for guns to put yourself in a position to be near it. And then you combine that with the cops that I work with are just so good. And everything works like a collective unit. So, for example, you could grab from a, like we all say, oh, the talent of this. You could grab any myriad of the people I work with, and their resume could read better than mine, not a doubt. If I have a skill, honestly, at this point, it's in presentations. You know, a lot of people go to the presentations I do. I make no secret about it. I'm definitely at this stage of my life. I'd say I'm probably a better presenter at this point than I am a worker, especially considering my current job's to sit at a desk. I protect the stapler from the paper clips. You know, I'm like, don't fight. And they don't. So I'm apparently good at that.
Tell me about the guy that changed your life, the cop that had this pivotal moment in your
career. So I was working at a convenience store at the base of a dorm, and I was hungry, so I was tired of eating Snickers bars. So I said, let me get some real food. And I go through the aisle or whatever, and I'm looking for real food. And there was a can of tuna with like a peel top. And I thought, okay, that's food, all right? It's not candy, it's food. But I didn't want to rip open a whole bag of forks. So I ate it with my fingers like a gremlin, you know? And so I had just taken out the trash. So there was an empty little trash barrel near the register where I was. And so after I'm done eating my fingers, I'm wiping my shirt, whatever, because again, young guy, gross. And a cop came in and he buys a newspaper or whatever he did. A friendly guy, campus cop. He said, yeah, how you doing? I said, hey, good. So as he turns around to leave, he turns around and he goes, hey, were you eating tuna fish with your fingers? And then he kept walking. Like, he didn't wait for an answer. Like, he was so sure, and he knew, and then he just kept going. And I just sat there with this dumbstruck expression, like, this guy had some training. I was like, this guy knows what's up. And in my mind, I credited to him that he had walked in, he looked in the trash barrel, because he scanned everything, like, in my vision of him, saw that there was an empty can of tuna, but no fork. I give him his change, smells the money. This smells too strong of tuna fish to possibly have this man have used a fork. And then just threw a Hail Mary pass, like a quick investigative question to me. Then he was right. And what's funny is, in hindsight, there's not a doubt in my mind, the dude just smelled tuna fish and probably watched me licking my fingers when he walked in the door and realized this disgusting bastard just ate tuna fish with his fingers and handed me my money. But in reality, that might have been it. But in my mind, I thought these guys got a second level of training. And I remember I called my friend and I was like, dude, I told him a story. I said, he's like, yeah. Cause he also had this fanfare idea of police training, you know? And he's like, oh yeah, dude, that's the kind of training they get, dude. Like, you get to read a room, dude, understand, you know? And I was like, let's do this. And I was more into that. During my presentations, I talk about that a lot. I say, I'm not a tough guy. I'm not the best cop in any room I walk in, but I'll take some nerd points. You know, I was a perfect like straight A student. Like
were
I'm
you
a,
really?
Oh yeah. Like I used to have a Rubik's cube and like you know what I mean? Like I'm a nerd. I'm a straight nerd. And
we have Rubik's cube here because I've got to get that video.
I actually, you know what? I keep one in my car when I'm going off our own. I'll bang that off for you. Yeah. It's not a problem. And if we could just watch for 2 minutes, you know, while I play with this thing. But sure.
Can you just wait and show my children this?
Sure.
You'll probably blow their mind. Your kid's impressed by it?
Not really.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Have you seen it before?
This used to be being a nerd. I do all kinds of weirdly.
That's like my
non-impressive
my
stuff.
Kids, when I start talking like SpongeBob, it's well known. Horrible SpongeBob impression, but they're just like, please.
Well,
don't do it again.
Yeah. Well, to be fair, I think there's a little bit of an extended mystery on Rubik's cube. Just like that cop who walked in that I overcredited with his ability to read where tuna fish has been. I think there's a thing. It comes with instructions, and there's a million variations of it. But there's only about 30 or 50 like algorithms. And once you understand the idea of it, you can throw it together. So it's not like in the movies where like only a perfect mind can connect the squares. It's not so much like that either. It's also not a memorization thing either. You also can't look at it and go, oh, you do this every time it solves. But that said, so in my presentations, I talk a lot about the mind and how we make decisions, how people react, why they do what they do. And we use that to talk a lot about how to try to be more professional about this job. And anyone who's been in the presentation knows that there's a lot of other moments of sort of, you know, kind of pontification of like, you know, here's some of the gems and philosophies on it's 2022. Like let's work smarter. Let's walk away from things that we would have back in my day in the 90s, you know, we would have addressed, you know, and let's focus this in a way that everything can pass the sniff test. Mm-hmm. If possible. So, but yeah, essentially, because of the sort of nerd angle of it all, that was really my kind of calling with the police. And so actually when I do my presentations, I'm actually proud to say that the way that I do how to kind of read the room and, you know, find the guns and all that stuff, it's actually done the way I always wished it had been. It's done through a thinking way and an actual read the room. And again, we could talk about some of those little cues, but.
Yeah, it's cool. Often I drift off into la-la land of my thoughts, and it's no surprise to me that you talked about you being a nerd and being able to solve a Rubik's Cube in 20 minutes. People have asked me, like, what is the variable of all these instructors that work with this company? And I got to tell you, it's intelligence. I've actually discovered that everybody who's an instructor here is very, very intelligent. I think it's a major factor in somebody who is able to go out and teach something that they've learned and pass it along, communicate it well so people can actually understand, digest it, and apply it in the field. But I'm not surprised that you said that. This is just a statement from me. My next question is, when did you start teaching and why?
So it started back in that anti-crime unit from the transit police. Whenever they'd run an academy class, they'd always have those guys volunteer to play like role plays or something, just because they were already the plainclothes guys. They could grab them on duty, didn't have to pay anybody. So I was working one of the nights that they were going to grab them. So I went over and volunteered at the academy. And at the design of it, the second time they did it, they had asked us if we could peel off and just kind of give them a breakdown of what we did. And what was kind of ironic was I wasn't a full-time member of the unit, but I'd done a bunch of things. So they had no problem me sort of opining within. So that was it. I kind of shot the breeze with the recruits during one of like the stations. Like it was broken to like sixth, you know, 1/6 of the group. And so as they cycled around, we'd give them a little 20-minute spiel on, you know, anti-crime work and all that. And I liked it. And full disclosure, I was going to be a school teacher. So, you know, I wasn't kidding myself about the summers off. When I took this job, it was a placeholder. I had just gotten accepted into the graduate program for a master's degree, a double, because in education, you have to double degree. And I was going to be an education master's student. And so, which I did end up going on to complete, but not because I ever went to apply it. I just like to finish it. So I kind of got the teaching bug if it wasn't already in me. And then that was it. Then next thing you know, having a reputation as being a guy who wasn't afraid of the books, they ended up sometime later asking me if I would teach the criminal law and the constitutional law. So next thing you know, I was teaching the criminal law and the constitutional law, and I was still doing this little class. They called it street crimes at the time. So now I was teaching three classes at the academy, but con law was 5 days and criminal law was 5 days. So every class that came through, I had 11 days. and they would run two classes a year. So next thing you know, I was in the building all the time. And then as time went on, I just developed more and more with the training stuff. And then probably around 2008, I decided to really organize my thoughts more. Instead of kind of a shoot from the hip, here's what we do, and a couple jokes or stories, they would just really kind of say, there's a system to this. And I think that that's when my career as a thief began, you know, like my career as a stealing other people's good work. You know, I'd come into work and the guy I'm working with would say, you know, hey, and again, I'm speaking in gang terminology here, so this may not be a universal concept. But, you know, we'd have like seven or eight of them hanging out in a park, and we'd look and we'd say, hey, we found a gun that was hidden nearby for them. And it was always like in the mulch, but like under a Coke can. And we'd say like, hey, you know something? Like they mocked this thing. Like they put this here so that if they get shot at, they're not digging through mulch. You know, like they got to find this thing too. Like, so let's use the clue that they used to find it. So we used to just going around all the parks. Next thing you know, start collecting guns all over the place. Wow. just by markers. And then we said, all right, let's put a word on that. Let's call that markers, you know? And it just kind of developed. So then I started just taking little notes and stuff, you know, like for example, the presentation I do with the gun game, like markers is, you know, 4 minutes of it. You know what I mean? It's just, and that's what the gun game is. It's machine gun fire of 1,000 different things, but they're all something that either came up from the guys and the girls that I work with that it was often a hindsight issue. You know, we look back and we say, did you ever notice? And we find these trends and these patterns. Like I would say, like, you know, we would interview everybody. If you get arrested, I don't care if it was for, it could have been for something serious or something minor, just everyone could talk to. So we could run these social experiments and we just ask people things like, you know, what's up with carrying guns and socks, you know? And they'd say, yeah, what's that? And you start getting these little breakdown theories. The guys would tell you, yeah, you know, you cut a hole in the sock here and, you know, you put your finger in there and you shoot it and then you don't get the gunshot residue on you, you know, if you have to do it. So, but you can't put your hand in a long tube sock for somebody that actually want to wrestle into it. So like, there'll always be a hole in a shorter sock, you know what I mean? And then, because it's sometimes hard to find the hole, so they had to put the hand in old school. Sometimes, it's to catch a shell casings. And I had, you know, at one point we realized that the long tube socks were kids who weren't planning on using it. They just wanted to hang with it. And it was in the tube socks. So when they ran, they could throw it further. And we actually ran that as a social experiment because when I'm teaching the academy, you can do whatever you want with the recruits. I was like, everyone outside. And we gave them these like weighted fake guns. Had them practice running, taking a turn, because you always throw a gun at a corner, you know, out of sight. And throw it frisbee style, throw a crossbody, and then have them take it with a sock, pull it out, give it a one swing loop, and then huck it. Those are still in the sky. We couldn't believe how far they went.
Wow.
Which then changed the game how we did that. We started calling fire trucks and fire ladders to the scenes to check the rooftops and finding more guns after foot chases. Yeah, that's where they all kept going, you know. But then we break down statements. You know, why do people say what they say when you ask them? You know, why'd you run? And again, this is all post-Miranda, you know, I'm moving past the legal obviousness. But we'd find these, like, you know, little gems in the statements. And they'd say, and I do this in the presentation, so a little bit canned how I'm explaining this now. But, you know, you say, guy, why'd you run? And then the guy says, I thought I had a warrant. Now, the problem with that is his brain told him that the warrant would be a good excuse. Mm-hmm. And he thought, I'm going to go with a warrant story. But then he has a conversation with his own brain going, yeah, but if I say I have a warrant, they're going to run my name and I don't. And then the brain's going to say, yeah, but it's all you get to work with here, buddy. He's like, yeah, but I don't have a warrant. I say, well, just say you thought you did. And he says, okay. And then back in real time, in that millisecond, when you say, hey man, why'd you run? When he should have said, I have a warrant, if it was why he ran, he's just finished conversation with his brain in that millisecond. And he went, I thought I had a warrant. Like he's already over it. He's already realized. And it's obviously not the reality. So we started highlighting statements like that, like speaking in past tense after an answer of something that took place in present tense. Mm-hmm. So things like that. So that's it. Like I said, it's the presentation is 8 hours of just a collection of all the things involved in the gun game. You know, how they carry, why they carry, where they carry, who carries. You know, the order of operations of everything involved in the gun game. But again, to be fair, it's all a collective of the department I'm on. I mean, again, I work in a department that's just, I think, doing it better than a lot. And the reason I say that isn't just a compliment. It's also because as much travel as I do with the presentations, I can tell you with a fact, I have like break room conversations with guys. Say, hey, when you mentioned this, like that was awesome. And the thing that they'll highlight, I didn't even think was worth even mentioning. I thought it was a given. And I'm like, that was a point to you too? I'm thinking, all right. You know, so I'm realizing that I think that just some departments, you know, people always follow the leader, you know? And as we've produced some cops who are up where I'm at that is so good, everyone around them chases that move. And then the young guys get on and they chase that design and that angle. And then I fell into that at some point. And then I chased it. And then I was now among the elite that are doing the best of this. And I got to work with them and learn from them. And so as it goes on, and what's funny is, and this is just a fact of life, and you probably know this, the more you teach, the more you do it, in a weird way, the more insight you get on it. Mm-hmm. You know, like you could go to work and miss something, go to a presentation, talk about what you missed, and realize three other things you didn't even realize you missed till you started talking about it, and then now you're on it for the next one. So it's funny, the more I presented, the more I had ideas, the more people would grab me with new ideas, mm-hmm. you know? Like, you know, I've watched like Kenny's stuff, and I've taken Kenny's, you know, presentation as well. And like, it's amazing to hear him like talk about like, you know, the misses and the catches and stuff. And what's funny is I know better than anybody. Those come out more during a training than they did in real life. Like we could even in a presentation, and then when I realized I missed this, but once you talked about it, it's far more, there's so much more to explain. There's so much more to unpack, you know, and you realize that.
You know, when I was approached about you, I think somebody else reached out to me and said, you got to get this guy. You have a reputation in the Boston area, New England.
I think as a trainer, not as a car. Yeah.
As a trainer.
There's no statues being built to me in the police field. But yeah, no, in the training, I would agree with that. That's probably right.
So what made you decide to come check? I didn't know you were coming to my class. I didn't know who you were.
Right.
And that's no detriment to you. I just didn't know. I'm not from fucking Boston.
Yeah.
I'm from New Jersey. What made you come to the class that day? Was that Boston University? I remember when I met you.
Yeah.
It was
our first date.
Yeah, it was nice. I remember the first time we hooked up.
Yeah. You were kind.
Yeah.
And that's all I asked. That's all I asked.
You knew the rules, man. I laid it out up front. I am not receiving today.
My safe word was pineapple.
Yeah.
So there's a guy that I work with, and he'd already mentioned your company to me. Not your name, but the company. He was saying like, see, he was always telling me that I had to expand. Because, you know, I get my training thing up in, you know, the Northeast, you know, and so he's like, you're never going to get any bigger than what you're doing. He goes, what this guy's doing is what you need to be doing. He'd even say things like, he's like, from material, he's like, he's operating now where he has such an audience, people send him material. So he doesn't have to even stay fresh in material. It's going to come to him. He's like, you could be sitting back with, you know, all this stuff coming. And the truth is, it's obvious, I'm not shy in a room. I'm not shy in a bar. I'm not shy in a training environment. I'm a little shy on the internet, you know, and it's just a thing, and I'm working on it, you know. I'm working on me. And so I've never been able to hop that fence, but you were the example, and he would say to me regularly, you need to be doing this. You need to be doing it like that. And just as friendly, you know, he's also in the training field. And so totally different area though. So with that, when your class came up, he says, hey, he goes, this is like the flagship class for Street Cop. He's like, this is, you know, again, that's the best way to describe it.
4 years ago.
Yeah, yeah. It was
3 years ago? 3 years ago.
I would say three. Yeah. It was right before the pandemic, if you remember.
Yeah.
Literally right before.
Yes,
like,
right.
So I came to the class, and then during one of the breaks, as people just kind of sit in little things, something came up about Boston. And you'd say, hey, any Boston guys here? Something like that. And then someone's like, oh, yeah, hey, these guys are from Boston. They pointed at us. You say, hey, guys, you know, whatever. And that was it. So I just... You said, Dennis, you know, nice to meet you. And all. I said, hey, Tommy Brooks. And then I don't remember if you flagged my name and went, I know your name and I can't think of why.
Yeah, that's right. I think that's what happened.
And I said, oh, get out of here, you know? And I think I made a joke and said, I wasn't even selling myself. I was just saying, like, I know names from people who go to the attendance because I used to have to go through all the attendance stuff. I'd print all the certificates. So some guy named, you know, Joe, you know, Smith would come through the class. I'd have written, printed, and put his name on an Excel sheet 8 times before the day I did the training. So when he shows up, and I'm like, yeah, I pictured you differently. You know, it's just weird. So when you said, oh, yeah, I recognize the name, I'd said, yeah, I go, I do training. I know that feeling. And you said, you know, that's how actually I know you. I think you do training. And I said, yeah, we shot this shit for a minute. And then I think about an hour later in the class, you had some point you brought up and you just literally flagged me in the room. You go, it's 200 people in the room, whatever. And you go,
a lot of people, yeah.
Yeah. And you said, yeah, and this is how this sometimes works. Tommy Brooks in the back of the room. And I was way in the back corner.
That,
yeah. You go, Tommy Brooks in the back of the room. He said, what would you do in that? I said, all right, so you want to play? Let's play. So I gave you an answer and without batting an eye. And I think that that basically showed you, all right, he didn't just curl into a caterpillar position here and go. So afterwards you grab me, you say, oh, what do you say? Grab some dinner, shoot the breeze. And that was it. I explained to you everything I wanted to do and everything that I could do. And you explained the same and we shook hands. And I think we both equally committed that day. And I think COVID hit, I want to say within 4 months. Before we even got tires on the car. And I don't know, I guess I just, you went to on-demand stuff and just some time passed. And then I swear when COVID even started to come free and you were even possibly going to be going to open classes, you called me and you would probably send me two texts and be like, haven't forgot you, which I thought was awesome too. And yeah, you called me, you said, like I said, wasn't kidding, never forgot you. We're opening back up in a month. When can we get this out there? And that was it. I brought my laptop. Have laptop, will travel. I came out to New Jersey. I parked myself in a corner in front of Rizzo and a few of those guys there. And I met all some of the staff. And I said, this is going to be a good fit.
Yeah. And of course, you know, your reputation is, it precedes you. Because as soon as you teach a first class, the messages are coming in. I'll never forget the first time somebody said to me, called me and said, hey, I took that guy Tommy Brooks' class that I mean, he is the best instructor. I mean, you know, you're good. You're good, but don't get me wrong, Dan. Like, you're good, but he's the best instructor that you guys, I mean, he's so fucking good. And I felt that way about Rizzo. I actually saw Rizzo speak about a month ago at the New Jersey Women in Law Enforcement event. And I hadn't seen Tom talk since he first did his first class with us. So I just don't go to classes. There's too many instructors now, and I have to run the company. Really, my job has shifted a bit. The podcast, the media, the company, the chief operations of the things going on. We got a lot of stuff working here on the inside, and you know it deserves my attention. Even Rizzo, at his last time he talked, had me on the edge of my seat the whole fucking time. So he's a some of you guys are just profound speakers.
Well, you discussed intelligence too, and so he also comes from a place of emotional intelligence. Like he spends a lot of time focusing on like officer wellness and all stuff. So he's hitting it from a couple different angles as well.
What's with the no shoes when you teach?
Oh. Yeah. So funny side story. I was a musician. I still am. I mean, it's one of the old, you know, once a Marine, always a Marine, you know, type of deal too.
Were you in the military too?
I was in the Marine Corps, yeah.
Oh, no shit. Yeah. How many years did you do in the Marines?
Oh, nearly anything. I signed up as a reservist and then I activated a few times, but my father, I told you I was a good student. Once my grades slipped an inch, like I was raised by a man who, you know, just a good man and just plays everything exactly, very pragmatic. And as soon as my grade slipped, he said, okay, that's it.
You called to the Marines?
No, he says, I'm not paying for school anymore. Oh, and I went, okay, I need a new plan. And so when I said I want to join the service, he said, that's fine. That wasn't where I was trying to steer you. He's a Purple Heart veteran. I mean, he's a multiple Purple Heart actually veteran. And he wasn't really thrilled about me going in, but not, you know, he felt no way about it, just your decision type of deal. But he'd say, he goes, just do the reserves. He says, if you like it, you can always go active duty. Mm-hmm. But if you go active duty, you know, you're going 4 years and you might not be a fit. Ended up being just fine as a fit. And honestly, it worked great. So all in all, I think I have like a year and 8 months of active duty or something. It's not the most impressive Marine Corps career in history. But
me and Kenny did.
Yeah, but like I said, that's why I said. I said, again, I'll take points for volunteering. You know what I mean? And that's it. But I was in a non-combat era of the early 90s. It was between conflicts. It's just, again, I have no, my Marine Corps stories are probably on par with any person who backpacked across Europe. You know what I mean? Just, it wasn't, I mean, I know all the Marine Corps in and out stuff and all the training. It's hard. Obviously Paris Island is its own thing, but, my point is, especially in this field, I meet service members, Marines, Coast Guard, Navy, Air Force, Army. I meet guys who served. I mean, like really served.
Rugged guys come to class with no legs.
100%. Yeah. And so, like I said, so I'm very cautious to not walk in a room and be like, well, you know, Marines and all this stuff. Yeah. It's just not the thing. In fact, even when I did my bio, that was one of the first things that I became very annoying to the street cop admins was they had put my bio out there. It was like Marine Corps veteran. And I was like, could you put non-combat in parentheses on that? And they were like, what difference does that make? And they were like, are you a veteran? I said, I am. Yeah. 100%. Yeah. And they were like, why? And I said, I don't know. It matters to me.
You got to a place where the DD-214 reflected you got veteran status, right?
Oh yeah. 100%. Yeah. But what I'm saying though, but it matters to me that I don't want anyone to give me more credit. I'm the opposite of stolen valor. Like I want
you want to earn it.
Yeah, like but also I really don't want any false reputation. Like I just
right, I get it.
Like we do enough.
Yeah,
in no, this line, the hate, but just the haterade and stuff like that, and we bring it on ourselves because you know, guy walks into a bar and he tells a story about the 1 foot chase he had, and then you know, then she tells some other guy, yeah, he's amazing, I heard, and they're like, he's our clerk, you know, and so I'm very cautious that no matter how you know things go for me, I'd rather keep it very realistic, you know, and for better or for worse. So anyway, but the shoes thing was I was a musician and I was actually lead singer and guitar player and. When you have all the pedal boards up front, if you wear different shoes, when the lights flash, and we played in pretty big venues. It wasn't like a little, like a couple acoustic guitars. It was a thing, you know? And when the lights are going, it's kind of hard to get the pedals right when there's a lot of them. And sometimes you have to combine pedals and stuff. And I used to sometimes have to kick my shoe off to feel the pedal through my socks. And then I finally just started playing in socks. And then honestly, it became kind of a running joke with people. Like it's that dude who plays this beer spilled all over the bar. Like that, and I'm the dude playing in socks. And also like anything, it's like a workout. Like I used to wear like a thermal and sweat myself nearly to death on stage. But I felt like it was a better show. You know what I mean? Some pouring sweat. Like I felt like you put it on. I'd play a show with like a fan. And I'd be like, this show sucks. You know, I feel far too comfortable. But anyway, so that was it. And it just became a comfort thing that when I was on stage and when I was presenting, it was just the shoes came off.
Can we just get the karaoke machine out for tomorrow night?
Well, yeah. Actually, bring out a guitar. I'd be more realistic.
Yeah, let's not.
I don't, why bring out a karaoke machine? I'll cover the music. But yeah, so with that, when I started doing the training, it's active. You've probably heard that. Like I move a lot.
Dude, I gotta be honest with you. I'm actually disappointed that I haven't been to a class yet, full blown.
Yeah, yeah.
The conference, and it is
September. I'll be around the corner in September.
I had Kenny's class yesterday because he's like, "Oh, give me some critiques." I get there and I'm like, "You made me drive 2.5 hours."
You're perfect. You're perfect. There's a critique. Yeah, you're perfect. Congratulations.
Like the one critique I had, he's like, "Well, I can't do that because it's a technical issue," and I'm like, "Oh, man, I'm fucking done. Why did I come here?" 5 hours of driving for me to like remind you that you're fucking amazing.
Can you imagine how hard it is to be Kenny to just be good at stuff and good looking and fit?
Get out of here.
It drives me crazy.
Yeah.
I have like the monster face, like side of like the street cop thing. They're like, Kenny and I should have a whole branding thing happening about like, you know, beauty beast stuff there. Like it'd be me like eating like a rotten pumpkin out of a dumpster or something. And then Kenny like, you know, cutting a dolphin free, like, you know, at the end of the Atlantic Ocean, you know?
That's so good.
But yeah, so that was it. The shoes just started kicking off whenever I did public speaking.
People ask you about that during class.
Occasionally, what's funny is people always think it's part of a gimmick. So like one guy grabs me, the class was over, and he goes, dude, I was waiting the whole time for the reveal. Like, when were you going to say, like, who noticed I wasn't wearing shoes today? It's like an observational cue. And I said, no, I just, the foot prisons, bro. Like hashtag foot prisons. Like you might've seen this. I know you have a lot to monitor, but sometimes I'll post after a class, a picture of my Apple Watch. But like, I've run 15 miles during a 7 hour block. Like 15 miles. It's look at me now. I'm screaming into a microphone. I'm just sitting there. Kenny hasn't said a word yet. Welcome. Kenny Williams and Tommy Brooks. And Kenny's like, thanks, dude. Seriously.
Kenny gets into his natural environment with somebody in the front seat of his car. That's where where he thrives. It's like
100%.
Like a different person.
100%.
Yeah.
100%. And we all know people like that too. That guy who like in a bar is hysterical, then he goes to work and he's like never said anything to anybody. Or in the office hysterical, bring him in a bar, can't say a word.
I had a friend of mine who, if you watch him in a business transaction, is magical. It's like watching the most amazing thing you'll ever see in your life. Put him in a room with three girls and he literally tries to crawl under the table.
It's awesome.
And I can't believe how natural he is to people he doesn't know.
Yeah.
To self-admittedly, I tell you, my game's terrible with women. I don't know what it is about women that intimidate this guy. You know what? But anyway, nonetheless, what are people expected, or what can they expect to get out of your training course when they take it? You know, we're here to try to give a little bit of the real reveal of the training course. What do people expect to get out of this training course?
So it's not, I'm careful with my verbiage that I really even try to tell people it's not a training per se. And here's why. A lot of people think of things like a certification if they go out of it. You know, they'll come out of some sort of course they took and say, well, I'm now certified in that. And then what happens is they get called in court on that and they'll put in their report, you know, having been certified in this, I then took the person out of the car. And so I've been through this legally, meaning I've done so many presentations up in New England. I've been called into 30 to 50 court cases where they file these rules on me, you know, turn over the material, show the expertise and all this. in the end, it really does come down to, it's a really clever course. And I tell you this, and people like it, because I have no advertising and I've never not had a class to capacity. I advertise a 50 person class. I post it on Monday. By the following Wednesday, it's at capacity every time. So the word of mouth means that there's something there, but statistically speaking, there's nothing there for the court. Like, I can't back it up. And so I'm really cautious with people. And I try to tell them, I say, you can't come here and say, okay, I had nothing, but then I took your class and now I have reason suspicion. It doesn't work like that. Right. Or I had some reason suspicion, but I've also taken your presentation, so now I have probable cause. And I say, it doesn't. Mine shines a light on what you're able to do in a common sense light so that you can now have the verbiage to explain it. All those moments when somebody says before, like, I felt like there was something wrong. Okay, I'm going to give you paragraphs of explanations to why there was something wrong. You can now highlight, to use just a Hackney example we used earlier, talking in past tense, you know. They could say, you know, I asked him why he ran. He stated, curiously, in past tense, I thought I had a warrant. I found this to be interesting because that statement would suggest he no longer thought he had a warrant, making me think that this was in fact not true. And that there may be another reason he ran, such as discarding something. Based on my opinion of the scenario, I believe this person may have discarded something during the flight path. At that point, I began to go back, you know, and then they can now step by step go through stuff. So I say I'm providing tools that are yours to steal. They're yours to take. You want to be a trainer in your local department? I've had guys come in and go, I do a lot of training at my PD. The guy's got a notebook with, you know, 40 pages filled up by the end of the day. And I joke. I say, dude, I talk fast and I speak in an accent that no one can understand. 4 miles outside of 02124. So I can tell you right now, like, good luck. You know what I mean?
You taught in Indiana. You did, right?
Yeah. I did, yeah.
Like talking to, like, literally just, did they have any emotion?
Yeah, they look like the Amazing World of Gumball. Like the character's face when they just kind of freeze on something really strange happens. Yeah.
Yeah. That's what we're reading those guys out there.
Yeah. No, it's good though. It's good. But you know what? It's no different. I have trainers that come up. I take everything. I was a trainer this week. I took, what the hell's your last name? Janine Driver, the You Can't Lie to Me. I took that this week. I mean, I'm always going to trainings. But yeah, I'll have some guy from the South. He comes up with some deep Southern accent and I'm like, this guy's awesome. And I can't hear a word for the first hour, but then it fits.
Yeah. You know? Ken,
I saved my jokes for hour two, you know?
Kenny Williams is here, if you couldn't tell. How about a question for Tommy that you want to ask him?
I don't know if I have any questions, but I do have some. I attended his class. I attended his class when he came to Indiana, actually hosted him, and then based on the numbers, we had to find a different venue. So
huge turnout. It was awesome.
Yeah, so Crown Point had to give us a venue. Anyways, some of the comparisons with like Tommy, that as he's sitting here talking, like, when I went to college originally, my first semester I was going for education. I wanted to be a teacher. Then September 11th happened and changed my perspective on everything. And so I find that interesting that now we are both in the education world. Like, it is just interesting in the full circle stuff. Also, he talks a lot about like how he developed his program. And it's very similar. Like, without knowing him, our paths are very similar. I'm nowhere near Tommy at all, but like, for me to understand people and human behavior.
I'm going to disagree with that on point. But no. So just let me be on record that I flagged. I threw a yellow flag. There's a yellow flag on this red field right now.
I'm going to warn you, Kenny's fucking good at the humble off. Yeah, so be careful. He's a good player of this because we do humble off.
Anyway, back to, I'm not anywhere near Tommy. And anyways.
What about me? You feel like you're anywhere near me?
No, neither of you guys.
I'm joking. I'm
like the small guy in the room right now. Anyway, so Tommy talks about how he learned people's like behaviors and why they do things by talking to him. And that's kind of how I developed my interdiction stuff. It's the same way. And not knowing Tommy and having that same path in our careers, it's interesting. I don't know. I just find it very, very interesting.
Mm, great statement. So Brooks, what else do you want to talk about?
I'll give you another parallel too. Yeah. So I actually referenced Kenny's thing and my thing. So one of the things I'll talk about is just trying to keep people at baseline. A lot of what we talk about is going to be finding baseline, you know, and I'll show videos of like my kids being my kids. And then I have like one thing where I'll actually interview them where one of my kids cut up a piece of plastic just playing with some scissors. It's just a tiny piece of plastic. I asked them who did it and they all said it wasn't them. Fine. So I sat them down and I asked them individual questions. It just pointed, targeted questions. And it's amazing that the class starts pissing themselves laughing because two questions anyway, you can tell which kid did it, even though no one ever actually admits to it. So like, it's just funny, just the magic of conversation, but it's because I know the baseline. And earlier in my class, I've already introduced them, you know, this one's this one's that. So anyway, I talk about how like, it's important to try to keep people happy and keep people comfortable. And so for example, if I come up to a car and you, or if you go to a car and you say, you know, high license registration, and they say, well, I want to know why I'm being stopped. I will never understand why cops say, give me your license, then I'll tell you why I stopped you. Because here's what's happened. You've just created a possible reason for any further conflict. And I talk a lot about that when people are friendly with you, it's because they want you to stay right where you are. Like I do a thing called the hot and cold game, but all my chapters are playing on the word game. So one of them is the hot and cold game, find things nearby. So we'll talk about how like, if someone hides a gun by that, you know, you have that bureau across the room we're in right now, you know, and someone, there's a gun on that bureau. And Dennis Bonino, the cop, is looking around. You're on the other side of the room. Like, hey, man, what's going on? Man, no, everything's cool. You're always so nice to us, man. I like the way you do stuff. But then you start meandering over towards where that bureau with the gun is. You're like, hey, can I talk to you for a second? And you're like, hold on a minute. Why are you being disrespectful? I'm trying to talk to you. And they're going to bring conflict because they want to pull you off it. It's a hot and cold game, right? So I say, like, when you say license registration and someone says, like, can I ask why I'm being stopped? It's a very reasonable question. Legally, you absolutely should be providing that. And honestly, you want to provide that because now I can keep them at baseline. So people who are doing something wrong, they're going to want to buy time. They're going to want to think about, should I put this on drive and go? You know, does he know? Is there an informant involved in this? Is this just a regular car stop? They're going to want to feel you out. And so when they say, you'll see things like they'll repeat the question, you know, well, what's the stop for? Sir, you have a broken taillight. Okay, but I mean, what happens now? Well, sorry, I should grab your license registration, but I'm sorry. Let me start over. Yeah, I'm Tommy Brooks. I stopped you for the broken taillight. I probably should have opened with that. Not a problem. It's all right. So you're saying the taillight's out? So what I find is the best thing you can do is bring them to an early baseline by just telling them flat out exactly what's going to happen. So there's no expectations now. You say, sir, they say, why'd you stop me? You say, sir, I'm sorry. Let me start over. I stopped you because of a broken taillight. My name's Tommy Brooks. And just so you know, I'm actually out here specifically doing those minor motor vehicle infractions. And honestly, we just want compliance. We're not looking for punitive damages here. I haven't written a ticket. You're my 15th stop since my shift started here. Haven't written a ticket yet. I have no intention at this time to write one for you either. But I do, however, I got to run your information. So if I can just grab your information, we'll get you right on your way. Now, if his information is good, there is no reason he shouldn't have gone right down to zero for baseline. Mm-hmm. He wants to get out of here. He wants to give you, yeah, great. My information is good. Yeah, good. Sounds like I got no ticket. Why would this guy want to drag this on now? Why would this guy be like, whoa, so you're telling me you're making car stops on taillights now? Why would anyone say that? So I'm a big fan of bringing them to baseline. So the first time I became aware of Kenny and his work, he comes out with the whole, you know, no court, no fine, you know, no court, no money and all this. I thought, God damn, this brilliant bastard put a tagline on something I've been doing for years. But it's perfect. So again, like when I watch Kenny's material, it's the same thing. I'm like, it's just, he's doing it from an interdiction standpoint. I'm doing it from a mostly city, but people carrying unlawful stuff. And I want to point out one thing too. I also say a lot that the stuff that I talk about is arrow logic. It only goes one direction. A equals B, but B does not equal A. And I'll give you an example. A guy is a multimillionaire. He's got $20 million in the bank. Turns out he won a $50 million scratch ticket. Not every multimillionaire won a $50 million scratch ticket. However, if you win a $50 million scratch ticket, you are definitely now a millionaire. So it goes one way. So I like to say, just because you see some of the stuff we talk about in the gun game does not mean there's a gun there. I want to be very clear about that. It could be a graffiti can. It could be a bottle of booze and the kid who's 20 in the car. It could be the guy just had an argument with this girl and he's wondering if she called 911. It could be that this guy stole something a week ago and it's still sitting in the trunk. It doesn't mean there's a gun. However, arrow logic. If there is a gun, you will 100% see all of the indicators we talk about. So it's just, I always caution people of that. Because again, I don't want someone to say, I saw these indicators, so I knew there was a gun. See, that's impossible. I didn't say you could know that, and you can't know that. And it's essentially impossible to have known that. But it cued you that if that exists, these would be cues that if you can legally get there on your own. Your arms are amazing, by the way. You just did like a stretch, and all I can think of is how I'm built like E.T. with these tiny, skinny arms and a little pot belly and shit. But it's arrow logic. So if you see these indicators, highlight them, use our presentations to make yourself as great as you can and professionalize yourself and all that. But make no mistake, there's not a single thing that we say in presentation that will ever be 100% or even be even 20%. It just doesn't mean it in that direction.
I sat down with a judge one time. He sparked a memory for me. And we didn't have the automobile exception in New Jersey for 14 years, pretty much my whole career. And I sat with this judge. We had a canine alert in the car. And he says, what do you think's inside the car? And I said to him, Your Honor, if I knew it was inside the car, I wouldn't be here. But I got a funny feeling there's going to be some drugs in there. He goes, what makes you think that? And I go, well, how many times have I been here talking to you? And he said, well, a few. I said, and when I send a search warrant return back, has it ever been empty? He said, no. I go, yeah, got an idea something's not right in this car. I wouldn't go this far if I didn't believe something was in the car. And here's all the consistent behaviors that I believe that there's going to be something in the car. And that judge was very liberal. He did not like the police. And he said to me, you better find something in this car, because if you don't find something in this car, I'm not giving you a search warrant next time. And in my head, I said, legally, you can't say
that. Yes, I say it doesn't work like that.
Yeah, no. You have to follow the U.S. Supreme Court. That's how it works. But fortunately enough, it was actually a significant seizure, probably one of my best ones ever. And I was thrilled when I found what I found. I went, go shove this up this judge's ass. You know, I don't know what their mentality was. But anyway, that was just a quick side story. Now, unfortunately, it has come to that time there.
Yeah.
We have to end this podcast. But, man, we should do this more. I mean, I know you live in Boston. I didn't want to do this in person, but
I got to
convince you to do it on Zoom.
Well, here's what it is. I wanted to do, yeah, maybe you're right. But here's the thing is, I only want to do it with Kenny, and because I'm doing all the talking here, but I really, if I'm going to do a podcast with my face.
Anything. He was going
to
say anything.
No, you said that. You said that. You're like, he'll get six words all day. And I said, well, don't worry. I'll cover the other 11,000. But I tell you, like,
yeah,
I'm like.
He drinks heavily, like tomorrow, he just laughs the whole time. Yeah,
you guys entertain me.
Yeah.
But let me tell you this, right? I want nothing more than Kenny on the podcast because there's two benefits to this, right? One, every time I can think of something, I can bounce off a guy that I look up to here within the street cop thing, right? So it gives me...
Here comes the humble offer.
No, but it gives me... Okay, well, no, this isn't even a debate here. I'm sorry. Like, this is a podcast. Let anybody listen to this tell me, all right, Tommy Brooks and Kenny Williams. Who's, how about this? I'll show a picture of a... I can post a picture of a baby being saved and I'll get 11 likes. He can show a picture of the sandwich he ate and get 14,000. So I think we're very clear on the hierarchy here and I'm super okay with it. But yeah, I just...
Kenny likes getting recognized in New Jersey too. That's
I fucking hate it. No,
it's
do not.
So good. I had a guy last night at DJ's and the DJ's literally filming me. Did you see that guy filming me on Snapchat? He made me take pictures, but I'm like, that's no problem. Then he's filming me. He's coming back with the camera again. Making sure he's getting trophies for his friends. And I'm like, good Lord. I mean, I'm literally out here just trying to goof off a little bit.
Right, right.
I don't mind saying hello, hanging out, doing a picture, shooting the shit. I'll buy you a drink, whatever. All that shit, right?
Right.
But like, after 10 minutes, I just want to go and be fucking social. So like, I have no problem. Just stop filming me. I'm not a great dancer. And I really don't want it on film either because I am going to shake my hips a little bit.
Right, right. Well, listen, I get it sometimes. People take a picture of me and then the next thing they Google is usually like most wanted. Or like they'll hold it up to the like 8-year-old and say, honey, honey, stay away from men who look like that. You know what I mean? Like to the 7-year-old. Yeah. I'm with it. By the way, also a clever guy. Also a clever guy.
All right, I got this podcast. If you guys don't have anything else to contribute, I appreciate everybody joining us today. And we're going to skip out of here and actually go goof off for the rest of the day. So, but I have to end it because I have a appointment in 2 minutes.
Yeah. And my only last thought here is like, we also talk a lot about treatment and making good decisions on this. Like I said, I don't want a stormtrooper program. We're not about that. In fact, the joke, the do not arrest this man is we talk a lot about walking away and just in today's day and age, like a poker hand. It's not just about having a good read. You got to have some good cards. In the old day, you had good cards. You played them without a read. You had a good read. You played them with or without good cards. We're saying have both nowadays. And we talk a lot about how to tie that all together and the importance of that.
Listen, I don't think anybody who's familiar with our training knows the truth behind it. Whatever anybody else wants to paint a picture in their own mind of what we do is certainly they're entitled to say whatever they want to say. But the truth is the truth and the truth speaks for itself. And I am just thankful that all of you are here with the company and we're going to do great things, and I actually think we have a shot at changing the whole goddamn thing. Like, the whole goddamn thing. I don't think that... And I'm watching it in the next generation. I'm watching them be attracted to the kind of training that we're talking about, the kind of behavior.
You built a background on case law. All the trainings up where we are, all the trainings are all hero stuff. They're all, you know, even me. I mean, I'm doing gun stuff, right? You've built an entire company focusing on case law. Like, when I heard all the case law classes you had, I thought, like... Who would sign up for that? You know, it just because it's not common. And then now, even in Massachusetts, you have so many coming there. Now I'm seeing all the Massachusetts cops talking about case law again. I was in a rare breed of guys who did that. You
how
know,
how important is it when you started reading it? Though?
Now, but I've always been into it. I taught it, but like I said, I now see.
Tell them the significance.
But your run of the mill cop wasn't paying attention to it. They were just going off of practice. The guy next to me did that. It worked. I'll do that.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
Hey, I hold box. I push button. Flash come out. Make picture look like life. You know. We operate in caveman mentality in how we do stuff. And then someone comes along and says, you know, there's rules to this. Like this. Yeah, there's a design to this. This is an ever flowing, living and breathing document here that's constantly being mitigated through, you know, not just the statute but the actual case laws. And it can vary. Things have shifted. You know. know, I've said to people before, open up your local case law, wherever your book is, like, you know, up with us, we have a couple guys who put the case law books out. Open a page and stick your finger right down on one. You probably got hired before the year of that case law. Think about that. If you got trained in the academy, that was the last educational training you had on law. Now you look, you said, well, this case law is 2015, 2011, this one's 2010, this one's 2020, Jesus. And you go down and go, yeah, I got hired in 1998. It means you would have missed all of it, you know? Mm-hmm. That's how far out we are. So the fact that you built a program around that, I think also speaks to your dedication to that, because you're saying, we're really here to focus on doing things legally, doing things right, and doing things smart. And I just, yeah, God bless you for it.
It's the foundation of all law enforcement. Like, it's one of the core foundations that we all need.
Well, thank you. All right, we're done. Gotta go.
Pineapple.
Bye. All right.